was somewhat slaked, and he saw things he had not seen before. For one thing, he saw that there was trouble at once between Olan and Kuku. This was an astonishment to him, for he was prepared for Olan to hate Lotus, having heard many times of such things, and some women will even hang themselves upon a beam with a rope when a man takes a second woman into the house, and others will scold and contrive to make his life worthless for what he has done. And he was glad that Olan was a silent woman, for at least she could not think of words against him. But he had not foreseen that, whereas she would be silent of Lotus, her anger would find its vent against Kuku. Now Wang Lung had thought only of Lotus, and when she begged him, "Let me have this woman for my servant, seeing that I am altogether alone in the world, for my father and my mother died when I could not yet talk, and my uncle sold me as soon as I was pretty to a life such as I have had, and I have no one." This she said with her tears always abundant and ready and glittering in the corners of her pretty eyes, and Wang Lung could have denied her nothing she asked when she looked up at him so. Besides, it was true enough that the girl had no one to serve her, and it was true she would be alone in his house, for it was plain enough and to be expected that Olan would not serve the second one, and she would not speak to her or notice that she was in the house at all. There was only the uncle of Lotus, then, and it was against Wang Lung's stomach to have that one peeping and prying and near to Lotus for her to talk to of him. And so Kuku was as good as any, and he knew no other woman who would come. But it seemed that Olan, when she saw Kuku, grew angry with a deep and sullen anger that Wang Lung had never seen and did not know was in her. Kuku was willing enough to be friends, since she had her pay from Wang Lung, albeit she did not forget that in the great house she had been in the lord's chamber, and Olan a kitchen slave and one of many. Nevertheless, she called out to Olan well enough when first she saw her. "Well, and my old friend, here we are in the house together again, and you mistress and first wife, my mother, and how things are changed." But Olan stared at her. And when it came into her understanding who it was and what she was, she answered nothing, but she put down the jar of water she carried, and she went into the middle room where Wang Lung sat between his times of love, and she said to him plainly, "What is this slave woman doing in our house?" Wang Lung looked east and west. He would have liked to speak out to say in a surly voice of master, "Well, then it is my house, and whoever I say may come in, she shall come in, and who are you to ask?" But he could not, because of some shame in him when Olan was there before him. And his shame made him angry, because when he reasoned it, there was no need for shame, and he had done no more than any man may do who has silver to spare. Still he could not speak out, and he only looked east and west, and feigned to have mislaid his pipe in his garments, and he fumbled in his girdle. But Olan stood there solidly on her big feet and waited, and when he said nothing, she asked again, plainly, in the same words, "What is this slave woman doing in our house?" Then Wang Lung, seeing she would have an answer, said feebly, "And what is it to you?" And Olan said, "I bore her haughty looks all during my youth in the great house, and her running into the kitchen a score of times a day and crying out, 'Now tea for the Lord, now food for the Lord,' and it was always, 'This is too hot, and that is too cold, and that is badly cooked, and I was too ugly and too slow, and too this and too that.'" But still Wang Lung did not answer, for he did not know what to say. Then Olan waited, and when he did not speak, the hot, scanty tears welled slowly into her eyes, and she winked them to hold back the tears. And at last she took the corner of her blue apron and wiped her eyes, and she said at last, "It is a bitter thing in my house, and I have no mother's house to go back to anywhere." And when Wang Lung was still silent and answered nothing at all, but he sat down to his pipe and lit it, and he said nothing still, she looked at him piteously and sadly out of her strange dumb eyes that were like a beast's eyes that cannot speak. And then she went away, creeping and feeling for the door because of her tears that blinded her. Wang Lung watched her as she went, and he was glad to be alone, but still he was ashamed. And he was still angry that he was ashamed. And he said to himself, and he muttered the words aloud and restlessly, as though he quarrelled with someone, "Well, and other men are so, and I have been good enough to her, and there are men worse than I." And he said at last that Olan must bear it. But Olan was not finished with it, and she went her way silently. In the morning she heated water and presented it to the old man, and to Wang Long, if he were not in the inner court, she presented tea. But when Cuckoo went to find hot water for her mistress, the cauldron was empty, and not all her loud questionings would stir any response from Olan. Then there was nothing but that Cuckoo must herself boil water for her mistress if she would have it. But then it was time to stir the morning gruel, and there was not space in the cauldron for more water, and Olan would go steadily to her cooking, answering nothing to Cuckoo's loud crying, "And is my delicate lady to lie thirsting and gasping in her bed for a swallow of water in the morning?" But Olan would not hear her. Only she pushed more grass and straw into the bowels of the oven, spreading it as carefully and as thriftily as ever she had in the old days, when one leaf was precious enough because of the fire it would make under food. Then Cuckoo went complaining loudly to Wang Lung, and he was angry that his love must be marred by such things, and he went to Olan to reproach her, and he shouted at her, "And cannot you add a dipper full of water to the cauldron in the mornings?" But she answered with a sullenness deeper than ever upon her face, "I am not slave of slaves in this house, at least." And he was angry beyond bearing, and he seized Olan's shoulder, and he shook her soundly, and he said, "Do not be yet more of a fool. It is not for the servant, but for the mistress." And she bore his violence, and she looked at him, and she said simply, "And to that one you gave my two pearls." Then his hand dropped, and he was speechless, and his anger was gone, and he went away ashamed. And he said to Cuckoo, "We will build another stove, and I will make another kitchen. The first wife knows nothing of the delicacies which the other one needs for her flower-like body, and which you also enjoy. You shall cook what you please in it." And so he bade the laborers build a little room and an earthen stove in it, and he bought a good cauldron. And Cuckoo was pleased, because he said, "You shall cook what you please in it." As for Wang Lung, he said to himself that at last his affairs were settled and his women at peace, and he could enjoy his love. And it seemed to him freshly that he could never tire of Lotus, and of the way she pouted at him with the lids drooped like lily petals over her great eyes, and at the way laughter gleamed out of her eyes when she glanced up at him. But after all, this matter of the new kitchen became a thorn in his body. For Cuckoo went to the town every day, and she bought this and that of expensive foods that are imported from the southern cities. There were foods he had never even heard of, lychee nuts and dried honey dates, and curious cakes of rice flour and nuts and red sugar, and horned fish from the sea, and many other things. And these all cost money, more than he liked to give out. But still not so much, he was sure, as Cuckoo told him. And yet he was afraid to say, "You are eating my flesh," for fear she would be offended and angry at him, and it would displease Lotus. And so there was nothing he could do except to put his hand unwillingly to his girdle. And this was a thorn to him day after day, and because there was none to whom he could complain of it, the thorn pierced more deeply continually, and it cooled a little of the fire of love in him for Lotus. And there was yet another small thorn that sprang from the first, and it was that his uncle's wife, who loved good food, went often into the inner court at mealtimes, and she grew free there. And Wang Lung was not pleased that out of his house Lotus chose this woman for friend. The three women ate well in the inner courts, and they talked unceasingly, whispering and laughing, and there was something that Lotus liked in the wife of his uncle, and the three were happy together, and this Wang Lung did not like. But still there was nothing to be done, for when he said gently and to coax her, "Now, Lotus, my flower, and do not waste your sweetness on an old fat hag like that one. I need it for my own heart, and she is a deceitful and untrustworthy creature, and I do not like it that she is near you from dawn to sunset." Lotus was fretful, and she answered peevishly, pouting her lips and hanging her head away from him, "No, and I have no one except you, and I have no friends, and I am used to a merry house, and in yours there is no one except the first wife who hates me, and these children of yours who are a plague to me, and I have no one." Then she used her weapons against him, and she would not let him into her room that night. And she complained and said, "You do not love me, for if you did, you would wish me to be happy." Then Wang Lung was humbled and anxious, and he was submissive, and he was sorry, and he said, "Let it be only as you wish, and forever." Then she forgave him royally, and he was afraid to rebuke her in any way for what she wished to do. And after that, when he came to her, Lotus, if she were talking or drinking tea or eating some sweetmeat with his uncle's wife, would bid him wait, and was careless with him. And he strode away, angry that she was unwilling for him to come in when this other woman sat there, and his love cooled a little, although he did not know it himself. He was angry, moreover, that his uncle's wife ate of the rich foods that he had to buy for Lotus, and that she grew fat and more oily than she had been. But he could say nothing, for his uncle's wife was clever, and she was courteous to him, and flattered him with good words, and rose when he came into the room. And so his love for Lotus was not whole and perfect as it had been before, absorbing utterly his mind and his body. It was pierced through and through with small angers, which were the more sharp because they must be endured, and because he could no longer go even to Olan freely for speech, seeing that now their life was sundered. Then, like a field of thorns springing up from one root and spreading here and there, there was yet more to trouble Wang Lung. One day his father, whom one would say saw nothing at any time, so drowsy with age he was, woke suddenly out of his sleeping in the sun, and he tottered, leaning on his dragon-headed staff, which Wang Lung had bought for him on his 70th birthday, to the doorway where a curtain hung between the main room and the court where Lotus walked. Now the old man had never noticed the door before, nor when the court was built, and seemingly he did not know whether anyone had been added to the house or not, and Wang Lung never told him, "I have another woman," for the old man was too deaf to make anything out of a voice if it told him something new and of which he had not thought. But on this day he saw without reason this doorway, and he went to it and drew the curtain, and it happened that it was at an hour of evening when Wang Lung walked with Lotus in the court. And they stood beside the pool and looked at the fish, but Wang Lung looked at Lotus. Then when the old man saw his son standing beside a slender painted girl, he cried out in his shrill, cracked voice, "There is a harlot in the house!" And he would not be silent, although Wang Lung, fearing lest Lotus grow angry, for this small creature could shriek and scream and beat her hands together if she were angered at all, went forward and led the old man away into the outer court and soothed him, saying, "Now calm your heart, my father. It is not a harlot, but a second woman in the house." But the old man would not be silent, and whether he heard what was said or not, no one knew. Only he shouted over and over, "There is a harlot here!" And he said suddenly, seeing Wang Lung near him, "And I had one woman, and my father had one woman, and we farmed the land." And again he cried out after a time, "I say it is a harlot." And so the old man woke from his aged and fitful sleeping with a sort of cunning hatred against Lotus. He would go to the doorway of her court and shout suddenly into the air, "Harlot!" Or he would draw aside the curtain into her court and then spit furiously upon the tiles. And he would hunt small stones and throw them with his feeble arm into the little pool to scare the fish. And in the mean ways of a mischievous child he expressed his anger. And this too made a disturbance in Wang Lung's house, for he was ashamed to rebuke his father, yet he feared the anger of Lotus, since she had found she had a pretty petulant temper that she loosed easily. And this anxiety to keep his father from angering her was wearisome to him. And it was another thing to make his love a burden to him. One day he heard a shriek from the inner courts, and he ran in, for he heard it was the voice of Lotus. And there he found that the two younger children, the boy and the girl born alike, had between them led into the inner court his elder daughter, his poor fool. Now, the four other children were constantly curious about this lady who lived in the inner court, but the two elder boys were conscious and shy, and knew well enough why she was there and what their father had to do with her, although they never spoke of her unless to each other secretly. But the two younger ones could never be satisfied with their peepings and their exclamations and sniffing of the perfume she wore and dipping their fingers in the bowls of food that Cuckoo carried away from her rooms after she had eaten. Lotus complained many times to Wang Long that his children were a plague to her, and she wished that there were a way to lock them out so that she need not be plagued with them. But this he was not willing to do, and he answered her in jest, "Well, and they like to look at a lovely face as much as their father does." And he did nothing except to forbid them to enter her courts. And when he saw them, they did not, but when he did not see them, they ran in and out secretly. But the elder daughter knew nothing of anything, but only sat in the sun against the wall of the outer court, smiling and playing with her bit of twisted cloth. On this day, however, the two elder sons being away at school, the two younger children had conceived the notion that the fool must also see the lady in the inner courts, and they had taken her hands and dragged her into the court, and she stood before Lotus, who had never seen her, and sat and stared at her. Now when the fool saw the bright silk of the coat Lotus wore and the shining jade in her ears, she was moved by some strange joy at the sight, and she put out her hands to grasp the bright colors, and she laughed aloud, a laugh that was only sound and meaningless, and Lotus was frightened and screamed out, so that Wang Long came running in, and Lotus shook with her anger, and leaped up and down on her little feet, and shook her finger at the poor laughing girl, and cried out, "I will not stay in this house if that one comes near me, and I was not told that I should have accursed idiots to endure, and if I had known it, I would not have come, filthy children of yours." And she pushed the little gaping boy who stood nearest her, clasping his twin sister's hand. Then the good anger awoke in Wang Long, for he loved his children, and he said roughly, "Now I will not hear my children cursed, no, and not by anyone, and not even my poor fool, and not by you who have no son in your womb for any man." And he gathered the children together and said to them, "Now go out, my son and my daughter, and come no more to this woman's court, for she does not love you, and if she does not love you, she does not love your father either." And to the elder girl he said with great gentleness, "And you, my poor fool, come back to your place in the sun." And she smiled, and he took her by the hand and led her away. For he was most angry of all that Lotus dared to curse this child of his and call her idiot. And a load of fresh pain for the girl fell upon his heart, so that for a day and 2 days he would not go near Lotus. But he played with the children, and he went into the town, and he bought a circle of barley candy for his poor fool. And he comforted himself with her baby pleasure in this sweet sticky stuff. And when he went in to Lotus again, neither of them said anything that he had not come for 2 days, but she took special trouble to please him. For when he came, his uncle's wife was there drinking tea, and Lotus excused herself and said, "Now here is my lord come for me, and I must be obedient to him, for this is my pleasure." And she stood until the woman went away. Then she went up to Wang Long and took his hand and drew it to her face, and she wooed him. But he, although he loved her again, loved her not so wholly as before, and never again so wholly as he had loved her. There came a day when summer was ended, and the sky in the early morning was clear and cold and blue as sea water, and a clean autumn wind blew hard over the land. And Wang Long woke as from a sleep. He went to the door of his house, and he looked over his fields, and he saw that the waters had receded, and the land lay shining under the dry, cold wind, and under the ardent sun. Then a voice cried out in him, a voice deeper than love, cried out in him for his land. And he heard it above every other voice in his life. And he tore off the long robe he wore, and he stripped off his velvet shoes and his white stockings, and he rolled his trousers to his knees, and he stood forth, robust and eager, and he shouted, "Where is the hoe, and where the plow? And where is the seed for the wheat planting? Come, Ching, my friend, come, call the men. I go out to the land." 22. As he had been healed of his sickness of heart when he came from the southern city, and comforted by the bitterness he had endured there, so now again Wang Long was healed of his sickness of love by the good dark earth of his fields. And he felt the moist soil on his feet, and he smelled the earthy fragrance rising up out of the furrows he turned for the wheat. He ordered his laborers hither and thither, and they did a mighty day of labor, plowing here and plowing there. And Wang Long stood first behind the oxen, and cracked the whip over their backs and saw the deep curl of earth turning as the plow went into the soil. And then he called to Ching and gave him the ropes, and he himself took a hoe and broke up the soil into fine loamy stuff, soft as black sugar, and still dark with the wetness of the land upon it. This he did for the sheer joy he had in it, and not for any necessity. And when he was weary, he lay down upon his land, and he slept. And the health of the earth spread into his flesh, and he was healed of his sickness. When night came and the sun had gone blazing down without a cloud to dim it, he strode into his house, his body aching and weary and triumphant, and he tore aside the curtain that went into the inner court, and there Lotus walked in her silken robes. When she saw him, she cried out at the earth upon his clothes and shuddered when he came near her. But he laughed, and he seized her small curling hands in his soiled ones, and he laughed again and said, "Now you see that your lord is but a farmer, and you a farmer's wife." Then she cried out with spirit, "A farmer's wife am I not, be you what you like." And he laughed again, and went out from her easily. He ate his evening rice all stained as he was with the earth, and unwillingly he washed himself even before he slept. And washing his body he laughed again, for he washed it now for no woman, and he laughed because he was free. Then it seemed to Wang Long as though he had been for a long time away, and there was suddenly a multitude of things he had to do. The land clamored for ploughing and planting, and day after day he labored at it, and the paleness which the summer of his love had set upon his flesh darkened to a deep brown under the sun, and his hands, which had peeled off their calloused parts under the idleness of love, hardened again where the hoe pressed and where the plough handles set their mark. When he came in at noon and at night, he ate well of the food which Olan prepared for him, good rice and cabbage and bean curd, and good garlic rolled into wheat bread. When Lotus held her small nose under her hand at his coming and cried out at his reek, he laughed and cared nothing, and he breathed out his stout breath at her, and she must bear it as she could, for he would eat of what he liked. And now that he was full of health again and free of the sickness of his love, he could go to her and be finished with her and turn himself to other things. So these two women took their place in his house, Lotus for his toy and his pleasure, and to satisfy his delight in beauty and in smallness and in the joy of her pure sex, and Olan for his woman of work and the mother who had borne his sons and who kept his house and fed him and his father and his children. And it was a pride to Wang Lung in the village that men mentioned with envy the woman in his inner court. It was as though men spoke of a rare jewel or an expensive toy that was useless except that it was a sign and symbol of a man who had passed beyond the necessity of caring only to be fed and clothed and could spend his money on joy if he wished. And foremost among the men in the village who exclaimed over his prosperity was his uncle. For his uncle in these days was like a dog who fawns and desires to win favor. He said, "There is my nephew, who keeps such an one for his pleasure, as none of we common men have even seen." And again he said, "And he goes in to his woman, who wears robes of silk and satin like a lady in a great house. I have not seen it, but my woman tells me." And again he said, "My nephew, the son of my brother, is founding a great house, and his sons will be the sons of a rich man, and they need not work all their lives long." The men of the village, therefore, looked upon Wang Lung with increasing respect, and they talked to him no more as to one of themselves, but as to one who lived in a great house. And they came to borrow money of him at interest, and to ask his advice concerning the marriage of their sons and daughters. And if any two had a dispute over the boundary of a field, Wang Lung was asked to settle the dispute, and his decision was accepted, whatever it was. Where Wang Lung had been busy with his love, then he was now satisfied of it, and was busied with many things. The rains came in season, and the wheat sprouted and grew, and the year turned to winter, and Wang Lung took his harvests to the markets, for he saved his grain until prices were high, and this time he took with him his eldest son. Now there is a pride a man has when he sees his eldest son reading aloud the letters upon a paper, and putting the brush and ink to paper, and writing that which may be read by others, and this pride Wang Lung now had. He stood proudly and saw this happen, and he would not laugh when the clerks, who had scorned him before, now cried out, "Privy characters the lad makes, and he is a clever one." No, Wang Lung would not pretend it was anything out of the common that he had a son like this. Although when the lad said sharply as he read, "Here is a letter that has the wood radical when it should have the water radical," Wang Lung's heart was fit to burst with pride, so that he was compelled to turn aside and cough and spit upon the floor to save himself. And when a murmur of surprise ran among the clerks at his son's wisdom, he called out merely, "Change it, then. We will not put our name to anything wrongly written." And he stood proudly and watched while his son took up the brush and changed the mistaken sign. When it was finished and his son had written his father's name on the deed of sale of the grain and upon the receipt of the monies, the two walked home together, father and son. And the father said within his heart that now his son was a man, and his eldest son, and he must do what was right for his son, and he must see to it that there was a wife chosen and betrothed for his son, so that the lad need not go begging into a great house as he had, and pick up what was left there, and what no one wanted. For his son was the son of a man who was rich, and who owned land in his right. Wang Lung set himself, therefore, to the seeking of a maid who might be his son's wife. And it was no slight task, for he would have no one who was a common and ordinary female. He talked of it one night to Ching, after the two of them had been alone in the middle room, taking account of what must be bought for spring planting and of what they had of their own seed. He talked not as one who expects great help, for he knew Ching was too simple, but still he knew the man was faithful as a good dog is faithful to its master, and it was relief to speak what he thought to such an one. Ching stood humbly as Wang Lung sat at the table and spoke, for in spite of Wang Lung's urging, he would not, now that Wang Lung had become rich, sit in his presence as though they were equal. And he listened with fixed attention as Wang Lung spoke of his son and of the one he sought. And when Wang Lung was finished, Ching sighed, and he said in his hesitant voice that was scarcely more than a whisper, "And if my poor girl were here and sound, you might have her for nothing at all, and my gratitude too. But where she is, I do not know, and it may be she is dead, and I do not know." Then Wang Lung thanked him, but he forbore to say what was in his heart, that for his son there must be one far higher than the daughter of such an one as Ching, who, although a good man, was besides that only a common farmer on another's land. Wang Lung kept his own counsel, therefore, only listening here and there in the tea shop when maids were spoken of, or men prosperous in the town who had daughters for marriage. But to his uncle's wife he said nothing, guarding his purpose from her, for she was well enough when he had need of a woman from a tea-house for himself. She was such an one to arrange a matter like that. But for his son he would have no one like his uncle's wife, who could not know anyone he considered fit for his eldest son. The year deepened into snow and the bitterness of winter, and the New Year's festival came, and they ate and drank, and men came to see Wang Lung, not only from the countryside, but now from the town also, to wish him fortune. And they said, "Well, and there is no fortune we can wish you greater than you have, sons in your house, and women, and money, and land." And Wang Lung, dressed in his silken robe, with his sons in good robes beside him on either hand, and sweet cakes and watermelon seeds and nuts upon the table, and red paper signs pasted upon his doors everywhere for the new year and coming prosperity, knew that his fortune was good. But the year turned to spring, and the willows grew faintly green, and the peach trees budded pink, and Wang Lung had not yet found the one he sought for his son. Spring came, and long, warm days scented with blossoming plum and cherry, and the willow trees sprouted their leaves fully and unfolded them, and the trees were green, and the earth was moist and steaming and pregnant with harvest, and the eldest son of Wang Lung changed suddenly and ceased to be a child. He grew moody and petulant, and would not eat this and that, and he wearied of his books, and Wang Lung was frightened and did not know what to make of it, and talked of a doctor. There was no correction that could be made of the lad at all, for if his father said to him with anything beyond coaxing, "Now eat of the good meat and rice," the lad turned stubborn and melancholy. And if Wang Lung was angry at all, he burst into tears and fled from the room. Wang Lung was overcome with surprise, and he could make nothing of it, so that he went after the lad, and he said gently as he was able, "I am your father, and now tell me what is in your heart." But the lad did nothing except sob and shake his head violently. Moreover, he took a dislike to his old teacher and would not in the mornings rise out of his bed to go to school, unless Wang Lung bawled at him or even beat him, and then he went sullenly. And sometimes he spent whole days idling about the streets of the town, and Wang Lung only knew it at night when the younger boy said spitefully, "Elder brother was not in school today." Wang Lung was angry at his eldest son then, and he shouted at him, "And am I to spend good silver for nothing?" And in his anger he fell upon the boy with a bamboo and beat him until Olan, the boy's mother, heard it and rushed in from the kitchen and stood between her son and his father so that the blows rained upon her, in spite of Wang Lung's turning this way and that to get at the boy. Now, the strange thing was that whereas the boy might burst into weeping at a chance rebuke, he stood these beatings under the bamboo without a sound, his face carven and pale as an image. And Wang Lung could make nothing of it, although he thought of it night and day. He thought of it one evening thus, after he had eaten his night's food, because on that day he had beaten his eldest son for not going to the school. And while he thought, Olan came into the room. She came in silently, and she stood before Wang Lung, and he saw she had that which she wished to say, so he said, "Say on, what is it, mother of my son?" And she said, "It is useless for you to beat the lad as you do. I have seen this thing come upon the young lords in the courts of the great house, and it came on them melancholy. And when it came, the old lord found slaves for them, if they had not found any for themselves, and the thing passed easily."
"Now, and it need not be so," answered Wang Lung in argument. "When I was a lad, I had no such melancholy, and no such weepings and tempers, and no slaves either."
Olan waited, and then she answered slowly, "I have not indeed seen it thus, except with young lords. You worked on the land, but he is like a young lord, and he is idle in the house." Wang Lung was surprised, after he had pondered a while, for he saw truth in what she said. It was true that when he himself was a lad, there was no time for melancholy, for he had to be up at dawn for the ox, and out with the plow and the hoe, and at harvest he must needs work until his back broke. And if he wept, he could weep, for no one heard him, and he could not run away as his son ran away from school, for if he did, there was nothing for him to eat on return, and so he was compelled to labor. He remembered all this, and he said to himself, "But my son is not thus. He is more delicate than I was, and his father is rich, and mine was poor. And there is no need for his labor, for I have labor in my fields. And besides, one cannot take a scholar such as my son is and set him to the plow." And he was secretly proud that he had a son like this. And so he said to Olan, "Well, and if he is like a young lord, it is another matter. But I cannot buy a slave for him. I will betroth him, and we will marry him early, and there is that to be done." And he rose and went into the inner court.
23. Now Lotus, seeing Wang Lung distraught in her presence and thinking of things other than her beauty, pouted and said, "If I had known that in a short year you could look at me and not see me, I would have stayed in the tea-house." And she turned her head away as she spoke and looked at him out of the corner of her eyes, so that he laughed and seized her hand, and he put it against his face and smelled of its fragrance. And he answered, "Well, and a man cannot always think of the jewel he has sewn on his coat, but if it were lost he could not bear it. These days I think of my eldest son, and of how his blood is restless with desire, and he must be wed, and I do not know how to find the one he should wed. I am not willing that he marry any of the daughters of the village farmers, nor is it meet seeing that we bear the common name of Wang. Yet I do not know one in the town well enough to say to him, 'Here is my son, and there is your daughter,' and I am loath to go to a professional matchmaker, lest there be some bargain she has made with a man who has a daughter deformed or idiot." Now Lotus, since the eldest son had grown tall and graceful with young manhood, looked on the lad with favor,
and she was diverted with what Wang Long said to her, and she replied, musing, "There was a man who used to come in to me at the great tea-house, and he often spoke of his daughter, because he said she was such an one as I, small and fine, but still only a child, and he said, 'And I love you with a strange unease, as though you were my daughter. You are too like her, and it troubles me, for it is not lawful.' And for this reason, although he loved me best, he went to the great red girl called Pomegranate Flower."
"What sort of man was this?" asked Wang Long.
"He was a good man, and his silver was ready, and he did not promise without paying. We all wished him well, for he was not begrudging. And if a girl was weary sometimes, he did not bawl out, as some did, that he had been cheated, but he always said courteously, as a prince might, or some might from a learned and noble house, 'Well, and here is the silver, and rest, my child, until love blooms again.' He spoke very prettily to us."
And Lotus mused until Wang Lung said hastily to waken her, for he did not like her to think of her old life, "What was his business, then, with all this silver?"
And she answered, "Now, and I do not know, but I think he was master of a grain market. But I will ask Cuckoo, who knows everything about men and their money."
Then she clapped her hands, and Cuckoo ran in from the kitchen, her high cheeks and nose flushed with the fire. And Lotus asked her, "Who was that great, large, goodly man who came to me and then to Pomegranate Flower, because I was like his little daughter, so that it troubled him, although he ever loved me best?" And Cuckoo answered at once,
"Ah, and that was Liu, the grain dealer. Ah, he was a good man. He left silver in my palm whenever he saw me."
"Where is his market?" asked Wang Long, although idly, because it was women's talk and likely to come to nothing.
"In the street of the stone bridge," said Cuckoo.
Then before she finished the words, Wang Long struck his hands together in delight, and he said,
"Now then, that is where I sell my grain, and it is a propitious thing, and surely it can be done."
And for the first time his interest was awake, because it seemed to him a lucky thing to wed his son to the daughter of the man who bought his grain. When there was a thing to be done, Cuckoo smelled the money in it as a rat smells tallow, and she wiped her hands upon her apron, and she said quickly,
"I am ready to serve the master."
Wang Lung was doubtful, and doubting, he looked at her crafty face. But Lotus said gaily,
"And that is true, and Cuckoo shall go and ask the man Liu, and he knows her well, and the thing can be done, for Cuckoo is clever enough, and she shall have the matchmaker's fee, if it is well done."
"That will I do," said Cuckoo heartily, and she laughed as she thought of the fee of good silver on her palm,
and she untied her apron from her waist, and she said busily,
"Now and at once will I go, for the meat is ready, except for the moment of cooking, and the vegetables are washed."
But Wang Long had not pondered the matter sufficiently, and it was not to be decided so quickly as this, and he called out, "No, and I have decided nothing. I must think of the matter for some days, and I will tell you what I think."
The women were impatient, Cuckoo for the silver, and Lotus because it was a new thing, and she would hear something new to amuse her.
But Wang Long went out, saying, "No, it is my son, and I will wait." And so he might have waited for many days, thinking of this and that, had not, one early morning, the lad, his eldest son, come home in the dawn with his face hot and red with wine-drinking, and his breath was fetid and his feet unsteady. Wang Long heard him stumbling in the court, and he ran out to see who it was, and the lad was sick and vomited before him, for he was unaccustomed to more than the pale, mild wine they made from their own rice fermented, and he fell and lay on the ground in his vomit like a dog. Wang Long was frightened, and he called for Olan, and together they lifted the lad up, and Olan washed him and laid him upon the bed in her own room. And before she was finished with him, the lad was asleep, and heavy as one dead, and could answer nothing to what his father asked. Then Wang Lung went into the room where the two boys slept together, and the younger was yawning and stretching and tying his books into a square cloth to carry to school, and Wang Lung said to him, "Was your elder brother not in the bed with you last night?" And the boy answered unwillingly, "No." There was some fear in his look, and Wang Lung, seeing it, cried out at him roughly, "Where was he gone?" And when the boy would not answer, he took him by the neck and shook him, and cried, "Now tell me all, you small dog!"
The boy was frightened at this, and he broke out sobbing and crying, and said between his sobs,
And elder brother said I was not to tell you, and he said he would pinch me and burn me with a hot needle if I told, and if I do not tell, he gives me pence.
And Wang Lung, beside himself at this, shouted out, "Tell what, you who ought to die?"
And the boy looked about him and said, desperately, seeing that his father would choke him if he did not answer,
"He has been away 3 nights altogether, but what he does I do not know, except that he goes with the son of your uncle, our cousin."
Wang Lung loosed his hand then from the boy's neck, and he flung him aside, and he strode forth into his uncle's rooms. And there he found his uncle's son, hot and red of face with wine, even as his own son, but steadier of foot, for the young man was older and accustomed to the ways of men. Wang Lung shouted at him, "Where have you led my son?" And the young man sneered at Wang Lung, and he said, "Ha! That son of my cousin's needs no leading. He can go alone." But Wang Lung repeated it, and this time he thought to himself that he would kill this son of his uncle's, now this impudent, scampish face, and he cried in a terrible voice, "Where has my son been this night?" Then the young man was frightened at the sound of his voice, and he answered sullenly and unwillingly, dropping his impudent eyes, "He was at the house of the whore who lives in the court that once belonged to the great house." When Wang Lung heard this, he gave a great groan, for the whore was one well known of many men, and none went to her except poor and common men, for she was no longer young, and she was willing to give much for little. Without stopping for food, he went out of his gate and across his fields, and for once he saw nothing of what grew on his land, and noted nothing of how the crop promised, because of the trouble his son had brought to him. He went with his eyes fixed inward, and he went through the gate of the wall about the town, and he went to the house that had been great. The heavy gates were swung back widely now, and none ever closed them upon their thick iron hinges, for any who would might come and go in these days. And he went in, and the courts and the rooms were filled with common people who rented the rooms, a family of common people to a room. The place was filthy, and the old pines hewed down, and those left standing were dying, and the pools in the courts were choked with refuse. But he saw none of this. He stood in the court of the first house, and he called out, "Where is the woman called Yang, who is a whore?" There was a woman there who sat at a three-legged stool, sewing at a shoe-sole, and she lifted her head and nodded toward a side door opening on the court, and she took up her sewing again, as though many times she had been asked this question by men. Wang Lung went to the door, and he beat on it, and a fretful voice answered,
"Now go away, for I am done my business for this night, and must sleep, since I work all night."
But he beat again, and the voice cried out,
"Who is it?"
He would not answer, but he beat yet again, for he would go in whether or not. And at last he heard a shuffling, and a woman opened the door, a woman none too young, and with a weary face, and hanging thick lips, and coarse white paint on her forehead, and red paint she had not washed from her mouth and cheeks. And she looked at him and said sharply,
"Now I cannot before tonight, and if you like you may come as early as you will then in the night, but now I must sleep."
But Wang Lung broke roughly into her talking, for the sight of her sickened him, and the thought of his son here he could not bear. And he said, "It is not for myself. I do not need such as you. It is for my son."
And he felt suddenly in his throat a thickening of weeping for his son. Then the woman asked,
"Well, and what of your son?"
And Wang Lung answered, and his voice trembled,
"He was here last night."
"There were many sons of men here last night," replied the woman, "and I do not know which was yours."
Then Wang Lung said, beseeching her,
"Think and remember a little slight young lad, tall for his years, but not yet a man, and I did not dream he dared to try a woman."
And she, remembering, answered, "Were there two, and was one a young fellow with his nose turned to the sky at the end, and a look in his eye of knowing everything, and his hat over one ear, and the other, as you say, a tall, big lad, but eager to be a man?"
And Wang Lung said,
"Yes, yes, that is he, that is my son."
"And what of your son?" said the woman.
Then Wang Lung said earnestly,
"This, if he ever comes again, put him off. Say you desire men only. Say what you will. But every time you put him off, I will give you twice the fee of silver on your palm."
The woman laughed then, and carelessly, and she said in sudden good humor, "And who would not say aye to this, to be paid for not working? And so I say aye also. It is true enough that I desire men, and little boys are small pleasure. And she nodded at Wang Long as she spoke, and leered at him, and he was sickened at her coarse face, and he said hastily, "So be it, then." He turned quickly, and he walked home. And as he walked, he spat and spat again to rid him of his sickness at the memory of the woman. On this day, therefore, he said to Cuckoo, "Let it be as you said. Go to the grain merchant and arrange the matter. Let the dowry be good, but not too great if the girl is suitable and if it can be arranged." When he had said this to Cuckoo, he went back to the room, and he sat beside his sleeping son. And he brooded, for he saw how fair and young the boy lay there. And he saw the quiet face asleep and smooth with its youth. Then when he thought of the weary, painted woman and her thick lips, his heart swelled with sickness and anger, and he sat there muttering to himself. And as he sat, Olan came in and stood looking at the boy. And she saw the clear sweat standing on his skin, and she brought vinegar and warm water and washed the sweat away gently, as they used to wash the young lords in the great house when they drank too heavily. Then, seeing the delicate childish face and the drunken sleep that even the washing would not awaken, Wang Lung rose and went in his anger to his uncle's room, for he forgot the brother of his father, and he remembered only that this man was father to the idle, impudent young man who had spoiled his own fair son. And he went in, and he shouted, "Now I have harbored an ungrateful nest of snakes, and they have bitten me." His uncle was sitting, leaning over a table, eating his breakfast, for he never rose until midday, seeing there was no work he had to do. And he looked up at these words, and he said lazily, "How now?" Then Wang Lung told him, half-choking, what had happened. But his uncle only laughed, and he said, "Well, and can you keep a boy from becoming a man? And can you keep a young dog from a stray bitch?" When Wang Lung heard this laughter, he remembered in one crowded space of time all that he had endured because of his uncle. How of old his uncle had tried to force him to the selling of his land, and how they lived here, these three, eating and drinking and idle, and how his uncle's wife ate of the expensive foods Cuckoo bought for Lotus, and now how his uncle's son had spoiled his own fair lad, and he bit his tongue between his teeth, and he said, "Now, out of my house, you and yours, and no more rights will there be for any of you from this hour, and I will burn the house down rather than have it shelter you, who have no gratitude even in your idleness." But his uncle sat where he was and ate on, now from this bowl and now from that. And Wang Lung stood there bursting with his blood, and when he saw his uncle paid no heed to him, he stepped forward with his arm upraised. Then the uncle turned and said, "Drive me out if you dare." And when Wang Lung stammered and blustered, not understanding, "Well, and what?" His uncle opened his coat and showed him what was against its lining. Then Wang Lung stood still and rigid, for he saw there was a false beard of red hair and a length of red cloth. And Wang Lung stared at these things, and the anger went out of him like water, and he shook because there was no strength left in him. Now these things, the red beard and the red length of cloth, were sign and symbol of a band of robbers who lived and marauded toward the northwest, and many houses had they burned, and women they had carried away, and good farmers they had bound with ropes to the threshold of their own houses, and men found them there next day, raving mad if they lived, and burnt and crisp as roasted meat if they were dead. And Wang Lung stared, and his eyes hung out of his head, and he turned and went away without a word. And as he went, he heard his uncle's whispered laughter as he stooped again over his rice bowl. Now Wang Lung found himself in such a coil as he had never dreamed of. His uncle came and went as before, grinning a little under the sparse and scattered hairs of his gray beard, his robes wrapped and girdled about his body as carelessly as ever. And Wang Lung sweated chilly when he saw him, but he dared not speak anything except courteous words, for fear of what his uncle might do to him. It was true that during all these years of his prosperity, and especially during the years when there were no harvests, or only very little, and other men had starved with their children, never had bandits come to his house and his lands, although he had many times been afraid and had barred the doors stoutly at night. Until the summer of his love he had dressed himself coarsely, and had avoided the appearance of wealth. And when among the villagers he heard stories of marauding, he came home and slept fitfully, and listened for sounds out of the night. But the robbers never came to his house. And he grew careless and bold, and he believed he was protected by heaven, and that he was a man of good fortune by destiny. And he grew heedless of everything, even of incense of the gods, since they were good enough to him without. And he thought of nothing except his own affairs and of his land. And now suddenly he saw why he had been safe and why he would be safe so long as he fed the three of his uncle's house. When he thought of this, he sweated heavy, cold sweat, and he dared to tell no one what his uncle hid in his bosom. But to his uncle he said no more of leaving the house. And to his uncle's wife he said, with what urging he could muster, "Eat what you like in the inner courts, and here is a bit of silver to spend." And to his uncle's son he said, although the gorge rose in his throat, yet he said, "Here is a bit of silver, for young men will play." But his own son, Wang Lung, watched, and he would not allow him to leave the courts after sundown, although the lad grew angry and flung himself about and slapped the younger children for nothing except his own ill humor. So was Wang Lung encompassed about with his troubles. At first Wang Lung could not work for thinking of all the trouble that had befallen him. And he thought of this trouble and that, and he thought, "I could turn my uncle out, and I could move inside the city wall where they lock the great gates every night against robbers." But then he remembered that every day he must come to work on his fields, and who could tell what might happen to him as he worked defenseless even on his own land? Moreover, how could a man live locked in a town and in a house in the town, and he would die if he were cut off from his land? There would surely come a bad year, moreover, and even the town could not withstand robbers, as it had not in the past when the great house fell. And he could go into the town and go to the court where the magistrate lived and say to him, "My uncle is one of the Redbeards." But if he did this, who would believe him? Who would believe a man when he told such a thing of his own father's brother? It was more likely that he would be beaten for his unfilial conduct rather than his uncle suffer. And in the end he would go in fear of his life, for if the robbers heard of it, they would kill him for revenge. Then, as if this were not enough, Cuckoo came back from the grain merchant. And although the affair of the betrothal had gone well, the merchant Liu was not willing that anything should take place now, except the exchange of the betrothal papers, for the maid was too young for marriage, being but 14 years old, and it must wait for another 3 years. Wang Lung was dismayed at 3 more years of this lad's anger and idleness and mooning eyes, for he would not go to school now 2 days out of 10. And Wang Lung shouted at Olan that night when he ate, "Well, and let us betroth these other children as soon as we are able, and the sooner the better, and let us marry them as soon as they begin to yearn, for I cannot have this over again 3 more times. And the next morning he had not slept but little through the night, and he tore off his long robes and kicked off his shoes, and as was his wont when the affairs of his house became too deep for him, he took a hoe and he went to his fields, and he went through the outer court where the eldest girl sat smiling and twisting her bit of cloth through her fingers and smoothing it, and he muttered, "Well, and that poor fool of mine brings me more comfort than all the others put together." And he went out to his land day after day for many days. Then the good land did again its healing work, and the sun shone on him and healed him, and the warm winds of summer wrapped him about with peace. And as if to cure him of the root of his ceaseless thought of his own troubles, there came out of the south one day a small, slight cloud. At first it hung on the horizon, small and smooth as a mist, except it did not come hither and thither as clouds blown by the wind do, but it stood steady until it spread fanwise up into the air. The men of the village watched it and talked of it, and fear hung over them, for what they feared was this, that locusts had come out of the south to devour what was planted in the fields. Wang Lung stood there also, and he watched, and they gazed, and at last a wind blew something to their feet, and one stooped hastily and picked it up, and it was a dead locust, dead and lighter than the living hosts behind.
Then Wang Lung forgot everything that troubled him. Women and sons and uncle, he forgot them all, and he rushed among the frightened villagers, and he shouted at them, "Now for our good land we will fight these enemies from the skies."
But there were some who shook their heads, hopeless from the start, and these said, "No, and there is no use in anything. Heaven has ordained that this year we shall starve, and why should we waste ourselves in struggle against it, seeing that in the end we must starve?" And women went weeping to the town to buy incense to thrust before the earth gods in the little temple. And some went to the big temple in the town, where the gods of heaven were. And thus earth and heaven were worshipped. But still the locusts spread up into the air and on over the land. Then Wang Lung called his own laborers, and Ching stood silent and ready beside him. And there were others of the younger farmers. And with their own hands these set fire to certain fields, and they burned the good wheat that stood almost ripe for cutting. And they dug wide moats and ran water into them from the wells, and they worked without sleeping. Olan brought them food, and the women brought their men food. And the men ate standing in the field, gulping it down as beasts do, as they worked night and day. Then the sky grew black, and the air was filled with the deep, still roar of many wings beating against each other. And upon the land the locusts fell, flying over this field and leaving it whole, and falling upon that field and eating it as bare as winter. And the men sighed and said, "So heaven wills." But Wang Lung was furious, and he beat the locusts and trampled on them, and his men flailed them with flails, and the locusts fell into the fires that were kindled, and they floated dead upon the waters of the moats that were dug, and many millions of them died. But to those that were left it was nothing. Nevertheless, for all his fighting, Wang Lung had this as his reward. The best of his fields were spared. And when the cloud moved on and they could rest themselves, there was still wheat that he could reap. And his young rice beds were spared, and he was content. Then many of the people ate the roasted bodies of the locusts, but Wang Lung himself would not eat them, for to him they were a filthy thing because of what they had done to his land. But he said nothing when Olan fried them in oil, and when the laborers crunched them between their teeth, and the children pulled them apart delicately and tasted them, afraid of their great eyes. But as for himself, he would not eat. Nevertheless, the locusts did this for him. For 7 days he thought of nothing but his land, and he was healed of his troubles and his fears. And he said to himself calmly, "Well, and every man has his troubles, and I must make shift to live with mine as I can. And my uncle is older than I, and he will die. And 3 years must pass as they can with my son, and I shall not kill myself." And he reaped his wheat, and the rains came, and the young green rice was set into the flooded fields. And again it was summer. 24. One day, after Wang Lung had said to himself that peace was in his house, his eldest son came to him as he returned at noon from the land, and the lad said, "Father, if I am to be a scholar, there is no more that this old head in the town can teach me." Wang Lung had dipped from the cauldron in the kitchen a basin of boiling water, and into this he dipped a towel and wrung it, and holding it steaming against his face, he said, "Well, and how now?" The lad hesitated, and then he went on, "Well, and if I am to be a scholar, I would like to go to the south, to the city, and enter a great school where I can learn what is to be learned." Wang Lung rubbed the towel about his eyes and his ears, and with his face all steaming, he answered his son sharply, for his body ached with his labor in the fields. "Well, and what nonsense is this? I say you cannot go, and I will not be teased about it, for I say you cannot go. You have learning enough for these parts." And he dipped the cloth in again and wrung it. But the young man stood there and stared at his father with hatred, and he muttered something. And Wang Lung was angry, for he could not hear what it was, and he bawled at his son, "Speak out what you have to say." Then the young man flared at the noise of his father's voice, and he said, "Well, and I will, then, for go south I will, and I will not stay in this stupid house and be watched like a child, and in this little town, which is no better than a village. I will go out and learn something and see other parts." Wang Lung looked at his son, and he looked at himself, and his son stood there in a pale long robe of silver-gray linen.
thin and cool for the summer's heat, and on his lip were the first black hairs of his manhood, and his skin was smooth and golden, and his hands under his long sleeves were soft and fine as a woman's. Then Wang Lung looked at himself, and he was thick and stained with earth, and he wore only trousers of blue cotton cloth, girt about his knees and his waist, and his upper body was naked, and one would have said he was his son's servant rather than his father. And this thought made him scornful of the young man's tall, fine looks, and he was brutal and angry, and he shouted out, "Now then, get into the fields and run!"